This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
8 minutes past 8 o'clock here in our nation's capital. We're tapping into the youngest of Charles and L. Willingham right here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. We'll keep you up to speed all night long on Wizards basketball. They're at the half, up 67-58 on the Philadelphia 76ers. Another team that all of a sudden is tanking. Josh Harris, tell the Sixers to win. Point blank, period. A couple of Wizards in double figures to start this first half. Alex Saar continuing his hot offensive play. 15 points on 6-9 shooting. He's 3-5 from downtown, 5 boards, an assist, a steal, on 2 blocks as well. Justin Champagne, one of my favorite Wizards. I don't want to say my favorite Wizard because that's hard. I'm a big Bub Carrington stan. But I love me some Justin Champagne, another Pitt Panther that just goes out and plays hard. Love that they rewarded him with a contract. It may be when the Wizards are ready to compete for a playoff spot, that Champagne contract may be one of the best bargains in all the NBA in terms of how much they're paying, what you're getting from him. So kudos to the young Wizards. We'll keep you up to speed on them as we roll throughout the rest of this program. In about 10 minutes or so, our pal Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network is going to join us. We get his thoughts on a couple of late-round guys that the Commanders could be looking at. And if Ryan was our guy Adam Peters, what would he be doing with pick number 29? Right now, I want to look at last year for just a second. I think overall, when you talk about Adam Peters' first draft class here in Washington, if we're going to give it a grade, obviously Jaden Daniels skews the grade. I'll give it a B+. I'll give it a B+ because while Jaden Daniels was a hit, let's just go through it this way. The biggest hit to me was Jaden Daniels, but to get production from a seventh-round pick before he got hurt like Javonte Jean-Baptiste, I think, was really impressive. Before Jordan McGee got hurt, you were going to get some production and good play out of a fifth-round player. So, excited to see what some of these second-year Commanders do in year number two. But the question that we're asking you at 1-800-636-1067, you can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. Which second-year Commander does the team need to have a stellar sophomore season? And obviously I'm going to take Jaden Daniels out of the equation because quarterback rules everything. We know it. But for me, man, when you think about where we have question marks still with this team, I look no further than Javonte Jean-Baptiste. If Javonte Jean-Baptiste, let me just put this caveat out there as well. If he doesn't get hurt against Baltimore, I think he is a starting defensive end opposite of Dorrance Armstrong by season's end. I think he was on that type of trajectory. Obviously, remember the big key sack he had in that Monday night game against Cincinnati. But like 6'6", super long arms. He first jumped out to me at training camp when we were still here. I think, who was he going up against? I think it was him versus Corn Lucas. And you just saw he's got a little bit of a quick twitch off the edge for a guy that's that long. But then what really stood out when we were in that torrential downpour out in New Jersey for the Jets joint practice, everything looked bad about that practice, if I'm being real. First team offense stunk. Emmanuel Forbes was getting absolutely owned by Garrett Wilson and Tyrod Taylor.
Shocked.
Tyrod Taylor of
Shocked.
All people. I know. Is he still in the league? He's on the Rams.
He's on the Rams, yes.
Okay. Can't wait till he's... Never mind. That was about to get really ugly really fast. Anyway, Javonte Jean-Baptiste was the guy that stood out to me during those joint practices because it's like, who is this guy running with the second and third team defense that's consistently, you know, beating his tackle and doing a good job setting the edge? I think he is a young man that really has a lot of meat left on the bone, so to speak, in terms of development. Ideal size. He's like a Montez Sweat clone in terms of the build. And I think he's a young man that has a lot ahead of him, and I think next year could be a breakout year for him.
I was surprised that he was still available in the seventh round when they got him last year. I mean, this is a guy that started out at Ohio State and then went to Notre Dame. I mean, that's two big-time programs, and, you know, I don't think he has the talent of some of the guys that you're like, he's not Montez Sweat. Obviously, Sweat a first-rounder, but body type, he's got something there. For a seventh-rounder, he's not nothing. And so I think he can really help this team out next year.
It was a good flyer that was taken because I think, be real, he's the reason KJ Henry didn't make the team. Like, it was down to those two when it comes to, like, your young rotational depth guy. I also think Jean-Baptiste outkicked his coverage. I don't think they expected him to be a contributor as early as he was. And obviously, I think a big part of that is Washington just was really struggling to set the edge consistently. They were struggling to get pass rush off of the edge. So I look at him as the commander that needs to have a stellar sophomore season because as we enter draft season, the one position that I think a lot of us look at and go, you can do a little bit more, is defensive end. Now, I will say this as we get geared up for Ryan Fowler here momentarily. Toby, tell me if I'm wrong on this. I don't think there is a glaring hole on this roster right now. I don't think a hole exists right now.
Yeah, I don't know that glaring hole. There is a hole at defensive end, to your point about Javonte Jean-Baptiste. But I don't know that anything is... holy smokes, at 29, you have to take this position or you're an idiot.
Right.
Like, there's nothing like that. Well, so, if they started right now, you wouldn't feel like they are just way overmatched with their second defensive end, whatever it is.
Right.
So, yeah, I think you're right there.
One thing that I've heard John Keim say a lot, one thing that my guy Craig Hoffman has spoken about as well, and I agree with them both, they have raised the floor of this football team. That's the one thing I continue to hear, and it makes a lot of sense when you think about the foundational pieces that have been laid here this offseason, right? The guy that I get excited about that they brought in is Dietrich Wise. I think Dietrich Wise, if you had to inject me with truth serum right now, who my starting defensive ends would be come training camp, it'd be Dietrich Wise and Dorrance Armstrong. Like, that's who I'd go with. And year two of DA is going to be interesting because maybe I'm being overly critical. Wasn't a fan of Dorrance Armstrong last year. I understand he kind of got hot in the postseason, but, like, I didn't think he set the edge well enough. I didn't think he was stout enough at the point of attack. For him to be, what, like 6'3", and be able to bend the way that he does is kind of interesting. But I'm expecting him next year to take a step forward as well. In terms of second-year commanders, another one, a sleeper for you all that I'm interested in. Can Dominic Hampton become a somebody? When you think about what he was at UW, a captain on that championship caliber team, they listed him as a dime linebacker. I thought that was going to be the spot where he thrived at last year. With the vacancy, I guess, that exists right now at strong safety. Because, look, if you think that they're just going to hand the job to Will Harris, you're beside yourself, and you don't understand how this group works. You throw Dominic Hampton in that mix with Percy Butler, Will Harris, dare I say Tyler Owens, a guy that was a ball magnet last year in camp. Curious to see whether or not he is going to be able to take the next step forward as well. One of my absolute favorites out on the line. What's going on, Playboy? Cowboy Todd, Captain Todd joins us. What's going on, Captain Todd?
What's up, Linnell, man? So good to hear you and Zebby on the radio, man. Don't call me Cowboy, please.
I got you.
Come on.
It was an accident.
Captain's okay. Toby, good to hear your voice in the chat today. I was told that Danny put a hit out on you because you were taking too much of his airtime. I'm not sure where you were.
Yeah, well, apparently I also put a hit out on Danny, and that's why he wasn't here. So I've heard people saying that I was taking him out, he's taking me out. I don't know what's going on, but I know that Danny should be back tomorrow.
Good to hear. No, I heard you were poisoning him, but yeah, that's neither here nor there.
Oh, my God.
It's all speculation, my friend.
Well, I'm about to say, is it tomorrow opening day? So we probably should bank on Danny not being available. It's a big day.
There's no breaking news tomorrow, though.
That's true.
That's the thing. If Danny's not here tomorrow, there's some sort of crazy breaking news.
Yeah,
Kevin
Williams is going to sign his extension, yeah.
Right, yeah, something crazy. So I'm going to answer your question. I think my guy is Ben Sinnott.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when we signed Zach Ertz last year, the biggest knock on him was, like, he's older. He's not going to make it 17 games. There's going to be some injury issues. He's going to miss time, which he never did. You know, he exceeded all expectations and everything. But, like, is he going to do that 2 years in a row?
Yeah.
You know, if he doesn't make it, if he gets injured in week 6, week 7, he's out for a couple weeks. Ben Sinnott's got to step up. He's got to develop, and he's got to be something important for us next year. That's my guy.
I agree with you, Todd. The one thing I would say, too, about Sinnott, about Ertz as well as Wagner, you better start to have a little bit of an answer and an idea of who the successor is going to be, because they can't play forever, to your point.
Yeah, and you got a second-round pick, a high draft pick. Man, a second-round pick is that's a starter,
yeah,
typically, right?
For sure.
And he didn't really start last year. He didn't do a whole lot, so I'm looking for him to really take the next step and develop and have Jaden kind of trust him a little bit more next year.
I hope that is the case as well, my friend. Be well, Captain Todd. I hope to hear from you soon, brother. 1-800-636-1067. We'll keep the conversation going on the Washington Commanders on the other side of this break. Ryan Fowler from the Draft Network joins us next, as we're about 1 month out from the NFL draft. Who does Ryan think that the Commanders should take with pick number 29? We'll get his thoughts next here on The Fan.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's Overtime right here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. It's the Youngest in Charge with L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. A lot more to get to. Just got our whistle wet to start this 8 o'clock hour when it comes to the Washington Commanders. We go hot and heavy into the Burgundy and Gold right now as we go out to the guest hotline for the first time this show. So we find one of my absolute favorites talking all things NFL draft, about Ryan Fowler, who covers the NFL draft and the NFL for the Draft Network. Give him a follow on the old X app at _RyanFowler_. Ryan, I think this is my first time getting to talk to you since you became married, is it not, my friend?
It's been a little while. Well, it has, man. I appreciate
it's been a
that.
While. Congratulations, my brother. I appreciate
Thank you
making
man.
Some time for me.
Of course, as always.
Obviously, when it comes to the Burgundy and Gold, defensive end, I think, is what a lot of folks feel like, Ryan, is their most pressing need. Can I ask you to play general manager here for a second, Mr. Fowler? If you were Adam Peters and pick number 29 pops up for you, do you think it's a must, Ryan, that they go defensive end there? Or do you think they've done enough during this offseason to genuinely set themselves up for the BPA approach?
Yeah, you know, Linnell, that's a great question. You know, I think right now at 29, you know, I am, you know, full speed ahead with adding an edge. There's just, and there's a lot of guys, you know, in this class that you can look to on all 3 days, really. But I think when you're sitting there at 29, whether they stay there, whether they trade back and add more capital, which is very possible, you're going to be, there's going to be some guys there to where you can find some guys that win in isolation. Now, I like the Dietrich Wise addition. You know, he can be a guy that can slide up and down for you. We'll see what they do with that elephant end with Javon Kinlaw. But you need a guy that wins in isolation for me. You know, I like what he saw from Dante Fowler last year, Dorrance Armstrong, but a lot of the pressure up front was off stunts and games. I need a guy that can line up away from the tackle on the outside shoulder and just win one-on-one. So at 29, I think my focus is on James Pierce from Tennessee. It's on Donovan Ezeraka from Boston College. I think if you get there, both those guys are there, and you parallel them both. I think either guy, you throw your, you know, proverbial dart at the dartboard and bring one of those guys in, and hopefully they become, you know, one of your guys for the next 5 to 7 years that you potentially develop into a Brian Arakpo, Ryan Kerrigan type, hopefully for the next few years.
I'd say love to hear that. The young Commander fan in me just got all geeked up, Ryan. You mentioned Arakpo, Sackpo, as we used to call him, and Coach Ryan Kerrigan now, Ryan. So it's funny how stuff comes full circle. One guy that I've seen linked to Washington, Ryan, is the cornerback Azariah Thomas out of Florida State. I think he just fits the bill for what a Dan Quinn-like corner would look like. 6'2", 200 pounds, ton of ability in press man situations, big hands, great body control. Do you see him as a surefire first-round pick? And if it's Azariah Thomas there, and let's just say it's Donovan Ezeraka, who do you think is the better prospect outside of the positional value?
Yeah, for me, you know, looking at Azariah, I'm right there with you. He is one of the premier man corners in this class. I would throw him up there with the Will Johnsons of the world. I personally like Travis Hunter much more in zone than I do man. You know, check out that Stanford tape from 2023 as far as my concerns, you know, with him in man. But Azariah Thomas, I'll say this, Linnell, getting to know this young man during the process and who Adam Peters and his staff want in the building as far as what you are between the shoulders, this is a young man that fans are going to fall in love with if he indeed becomes a Washington Commander. He comes on the field and he can align in the contact window, as you mentioned. He can flip and run. He can play man coverage. He's not afraid to, you know, when teams are going to play teams inside out where they force corners to tackle, he's not afraid to do that either. He's got the size, got the length, got the instincts to what Joe Witt wants to do on the outside. So I think at 29, I'm absolutely comfortable with him there. Now, I personally would have Donovan Ezeraka above him, just considering need right now and want as far as what the Commanders could do there in the first round. But they need some ball players, I think, at either spot, considering where this team is right now. They would have to consider add-on defense. But either guy, Azariah, Donovan at 29, both ACC guys. I mean, you know, when you look at Donovan specifically, I wanted to mention his tape against Pittsburgh real quick where – 14 pressures, 5 sacks. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. You know, when you're a scout, right, looking at these guys, say what tape is really going to impress me and impress me as a GM. Turn on this tape, coach, and let me know what you see. And that's the type of tape for Donovan Ezeraka. So really good players.
Yeah, I get geeked up and excited thinking about him. I love the effort when you talk about Donovan Ezeraka as well. Not the biggest guy in the world either, but he just plays through his pads and love that about him as well. For you personally, Ryan, and this is why we bring you on, I love your insight and expertise. I think you follow it as well as anybody across the country, my brother. In terms of, like, the edge grades in the first round, because I think we see it every year, right? Because it's a premium position, there's going to be a run. Abdul Carter obviously goes top 5. Jaylon Walker is going to go high. Mykael Williams may be the guy that slides a little bit, but I doubt it because he's just a freak show. James Pierce, another freak show. At 29, like, who do you think Washington's going to have the chance to pick through here? And would that influence whether or not you go edge at 29 or not? Because it feels like, man, a lot of those guys may be off the board at 29.
Yeah, I think Mike Green is a very interesting situation right now. You know, can't talk about it too much on here, but there is some stuff that is legitimately going on behind the scenes there with Mike. But, again, as a football player, you turn on the tape with him as a run defender and him being able to get after the passer is outstanding. You know, I don't think that's a guy that gets out of the top 15 picks when it's all said and done for me. But I think when you look at this draft, we're at 29 away from Ezeraka, who we've talked about, or the athleticism and versatility of a James Pierce,
I think if you stay there, I think you look at Nick Scourton from Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. I think you look at Landon Jackson. Is there also a player that's a smaller school kid that is versatile? And Darius Alexander, that's gotten some first-round buzz. You know, that's not a typical edge, right, in this defense. But considering what they've done with Wise, with Armstrong, with Javon Kinlaw, where they want some guys to bump up and down, or what you're even seeing with Frankie Louvu, where he's putting his hand in the dirt and then playing off-ball backer, if you want some versatile players in your front seven, there's no reason to think Darius Alexander could not be there. And then also a guy they've had in for a 30 visit in Samuel Adejo.
Yeah.
So all those names right there could be there at 29. I just think this class is so loaded, Linnell, as you work into day two of the David Walker from Central Arkansas, Ashton Gelati from Louisville, who I really like as well. So all those players, even a Q Robinson from Alabama I really like. There's so many guys. We can go on and talk ball all day long, but they're going to be in a good spot to add some players to flat out get after the passer, because at the end of the day, defense was the concern last year. It wasn't the offensive side of the ball.
I agree with you 100%. We're joined right now by my guy Ryan Fowler, who covers the NFL and the NFL draft for the Draft Network. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at _RyanFowler_. This just came out. I think it's via the Todd McShay podcast. He does a podcast with The Ringer, does a great job, obviously, formerly of ESPN. He's talking about one of the guys that before the season started, or during the season, rather, I was like, man, I would love for Washington to have him, but it feels like his hype has died off. The Mizzou wideout, Luther Burden. This is a quote from McShay, Ryan. Quote, "There's a lot of diva, and the biggest thing, you know, when I talk to NFL teams, he just flat out quit in that Alabama game. I'm sure I'll have people calling and SIDs and everything else, but go watch it for yourself." What do you see when you cut on Luther Burden, and is he a legitimate first-round wide receiver?
I think he is. I am lower on this wide receiver class as a whole, Linnell, lower on Seth McMillan, lower on Luther Burden, both those guys in that 20 to 30 range for me. I really do like the day two bucket of guys, but with Luther Burden, you know, very surprised, even coming out of high school as a five-star kid, you know, from Missouri, staying inside the state, didn't go to a big-time SEC program or Ohio State or anything like that. I still see first-round traits in his game. The acceleration and the ability after the catch are outstanding. You know, that is really his A trait. His elite trait is what scouts look for. But I've heard the same things, you know, that Todd McShay mentioned. And, you know, I think there's even more stuff behind the scenes that probably didn't even talk about on there, as far as even some family concerns and kind of who's in his inner circle as well, and his love for football. And I'll even say this, you know, when you're a GM, you're Adam Peters in this perspective, to where you want to get a guy in the building as a first round pick. Mm-hmm. You're not drafting him to just be here for 4 years. You're trying to get guys that can be here on a second contract. And if you get a guy in the building, that's sure, you know, he looks good coming off the bus and wearing a t-shirt and shorts in rookie minicamp. But when you start popping and when you start having the veterans in the building, like a Terry McLaurin and a Deebo Samuel, could you be that guy that also says, hey, I want to put the grind in if I'm a potential wide receiver three here? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if right now I could say that Luther Burden loves the game of football. And I think that's the biggest question from GMs around the league that may make him or may not make him a first-round pick.
Wow, that's good stuff here from our guy Ryan Fowler, telling it how a T.I. is when it comes to these draft prospects. There's one defensive back prospect that's got a little bit of an injury flag on him, Siobhan Revel out of East Carolina. I'm starting to see let me first of all say this. ACLs nowadays are like a hangnail, Ryan. When you cut on his tape, I think he would be CB2 at least in this class. If it wasn't for the injury, I prefer him over Will Johnson. I put him right after Travis Hunter probably. What are you hearing about him from a medical standpoint and when he could potentially be ready? And would he be somebody that you think Washington would have to seriously consider at 29?
Absolutely. On all positive things with Siobhan. Got a great relationship with him and his representatives, and he is full steam ahead, you know, going to be ready for training camp in the regular season from what I've been told.
Love
and
it.
He's a guy that's already working up towards, you know, 21, 22 miles an hour on the treadmill.
Wow.
You know, that's not football, but again, you know, from reconstructing that knee from where he had surgery on October 15th, he is on the path to be ready to go for his rookie season. And I'm right there with you. You know, the traits are all there, 6'3", going to play probably around that 190, 195. The length's outstanding. I mean, probably one of the better premier downhill defenders in this class. He can also flip and run, as you've seen on tape at ECU. I really like the tape, and I think matching up athleticism and overall football player and then knowing who this young man is, he's starting to check off all those boxes that teams look for, really in a class, Linnell, that is so far up in the air when you're trying to find really those quote-unquote surefire things. So I wouldn't be shocked if he's the guy at 29. I wouldn't be shocked if he's the guy that goes in the low 20s in this class. Yeah. I wouldn't. So heck of a ball player, you know, looks the part, plays the part. The injury, of course, is the big thing. Him, even with the Benjamin Morrison as well from Notre Dame, with the hip flexor this year. So two guys that I personally really do like in this class, late day one, early portions of day two.
It's going to be fascinating to see how it all shakes out. The other thing, more about Siobhan here for a second, I'm glad you mentioned him playing downhill. He's just got that dog in him. And I know we throw that out there a lot, but you can see it and it pops out on tape when he plays. So I would not mind, and I'm sure the DMV would mind as well, Ryan, if he ended up here with the burgundy and gold. The running back position is starting to get a little bit more buzz here as we get closer to the draft, relative to the Commanders, rather. I've seen Travion Henderson sneak into the first round. Would that be a scheme fit, and does he fit what Washington wants to do, and should he have a first-round grade on him?
Again, another guy, Linnell, that I would not be shocked goes in the first round. Me personally, I think for the Commanders for second, even at 29, are guys that are around that range. You know, you look at the Chargers, for example, or some other teams on there, Denver as well. You know, are they going to make it Amari Hampton, you know, with Ashton Gentry expected to go in the top 15 picks? You know, we'll see. But I think with Travion at 5'10", 205, one thing that pops out to me, not only the explosiveness and the Commanders flat out need more juice in the backfield, is his ability in pass pro. And as a young guy looking for snaps on the football field, you're going to find your way in the field if you can pass pro. You know, stick your face in the mud a little bit. Because blocking at the end of the day, specifically from receivers, tight ends, running backs, it's an effort thing. It's not about technique. It's not about size. Are you going to do it or are you not?
Yep.
And Travion Henderson at Ohio State, where you already have that humongous spotlight on you, regardless of the amount of stars you came in as a high school recruit, that's a big-time ball player that does a lot of different things for you. So I would not be shocked he goes in the first round. Is that at 29? Would I be mad at that? I'll say this right now, no. You add juice and you go potentially BPA into this offense, and good luck stopping Jaden Daniels and company. But I think on day two, maybe it's a physical ball carrier like a Damian Martinez or maybe Cam Scataboo, or maybe do you want to go a bit of a lighter type of guy, scat back, really good hands, and a Rashard Smith from SMU, or even a Quinn Allen as well from Syracuse. There's just – well, now we could sit here for 2 hours talking about the 30 to 35 guys, man.
That's why I love having you. You do your homework, and you always get us smarter, man. I want to look at the safety position here real quick, because I do also think – with the departure of Jeremy Chinn, maybe that comes into play at 29 as well, if it is a BPA type of situation. Some folks that I hear, and I didn't watch a ton of Georgia this year, and I'm not really that familiar with this guy, Malachi Starks, but I always see him falling in that 20 to 29 range in people's mocks. I've seen some people view him as the best safety in the class. Others prefer Eman Wari from South Carolina. What's your feel on Starks and what this year was for him?
Yeah, it was really fun following Malachi the last 2 years. You know, triple option quarterback in high school, that athleticism obviously transferred into Georgia, where you know the type of defenders you're always going to get coming out of Kirby Smart's group. I want to see Malachi improve as a tackler coming downhill. Now, if Adam Peters specifically wanted a center field type of safety to play number to number and really be a souped up version of Percy Butler, absolutely. Then you draft Malachi Starks, you don't bat an eye, and you go from there, and you allow Will Harris to play downhill. I love that addition. Now, Nick Emenwori, I have major concerns with him as far as his footwork and his hips and coverage, right? He's big, he's long, he's strong, he looks the part, but can you actually do things at the NFL level that are going to translate? And there's times where he gets completely lost in coverage, and I don't see that translating well to the NFL level. So it scares me a little bit. So right now I do have Starks as my safety one. But I think there's guys on day two that I really like even better than taking a guy at 29, like a Starks or Eman Wari. I really like Xavier Watts from Notre Dame. That's just a guy that's going to come in right away from Marcus Freeman's program, Linnell, that you just plug and play and just going to be a flat-out ball player for a long, long time at all three levels. And also Billy Bowman Jr. from Oklahoma. You know, this is a part of the process, Linnell, where – I just get pumped up with these guys too. You know, it's fun talking about these players, you know, because you watch him, Jalen, he's a lot like Jalen Petrie coming out of Baylor that went to the Houston Texans.
Crash dummy mentality then, huh?
Absolutely. You want that enforcement mentality sometimes, you know, and I know we've seen the Sean Taylor days, the DJ Swearingers, the OJ Atagwe even popped a little bit, but Billy Bowman.
What a pull, right? OJ
Atagwe. You know, Billy Bowman will pop you.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Will Harris, but you need some more bodies in that room because I think I like Kwan. I do like Will Harris, but behind those guys, you know, Percy Butler for me is still up in the air. There's a lot of guys in this group. Even a guy, I will say this, Linnell is a local guy.
Mm-hmm.
Jonas Sanker from Virginia.
Okay.
For me, one of the best tacklers overall in this class, regardless of position on day three.
Love to see it. I'll let you go on this, Ryan, as we got to be quick. We're up against the clock. I have kind of gotten annoyed throughout this process with how we're evaluating Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. I continue to think both of those guys, if put in the right situation, have the type of ceiling where they can develop into a top 12 to 15 quarterback in this league. Do you view them the same? If not, why?
I do. You know, Cam Ward, for me, there is a large separation between him and Shedeur. For me, but even looking at potentially at the Giants, let's just say they're able to get Shedeur Sanders. You know, the Giants roster, Linnell, I think is very underrated. You know, they've added guys on offense. You know, Tyrone Tracy, Theo Johnson at tight end. They've added guys on defense. They added a Debo and Javon Holland in free agency this year. They got some guys.
Yeah.
I think if you bring in a guy like Shedeur Sanders with the confidence and swagger that he plays with, what I personally love, it rubs people the wrong way, but I want that under center, especially in the bright lights of New York. So I'm right there with you. I think they have all the tools in the world that if they fine-tune their ability, you know, we came off a year with Jaden and Caleb and Drake May and these guys where we got spoiled a little bit. But these guys can play some ball too, and I think in the right situations, the right correlating surroundings, they'll be just fine moving forward.
Ryan, I appreciate you joining us as always, my friend. We'll do it again a couple more times before next month's draft. I'm excited. Keep your head in the tape, my friend, so you can keep educating us, brother.
Of course. Absolutely. Thanks as always, Linnell.
One of the absolute best talking all things NFL and NFL draft, Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network. Kevin Sheehan going to join us top of the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to ask Kevin all about University of Maryland men's basketball. When we come back, we'll talk about the future of Kevin Willard at Maryland. I had a source text me earlier today saying he feels like he's all but gone. Coach Willard joined Kevin Sheehan earlier today and spoke about his future in College Park. We'll let you hear that as well next on The Fan. Still moving and grooving right along as we're creeping up on the final hour of power right here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. It's the youngest of Charles and O. Willingham taking up the 10 o'clock. Kevin Sheehan going to join us top of the 9 o'clock hour as we talk all things Maryland Terrapins basketball. But it is opening day tomorrow in Major League Baseball, and I'm super excited for that. Toby going to be out at the ballpark all day tomorrow. I was actually kind of like surprised it's a 4 p.m. first pitch for the opening game. But I guess it's something special for the first game of the season. As we put a bow on spring training, what was it, Sunday or Saturday? And then the exhibition game, did it get canceled, I believe?
Yeah, it got canceled on Monday.
Yep. So you don't get the exhibition. What do you think, what revelation in spring training do you think is most likely to be a thing during the regular season?
Jose A. Ferrer. Put that name on your radar.
RGP talking about him.
Reliever, lefty. Nasty.
Yeah.
Throws gas.
Okay.
Probably, you know, 97, 98 from the left side.
Does he start this year
it's going to be Finnegan as the closer. But he could get opportunities as early as tomorrow.
Wow, yeah.
So Finnegan's the de facto closer. But if in the 7th, 8th, or 9th inning, it comes up that Schwarber and Harper do up 2 of the 3,
yeah,
and they want a lefty in there, Jose A. Ferrer is going to get some looks. So he's got a real opportunity. That's a name you heard from a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's someone I keep an eye on this year.
It's going to be interesting to see him, and I think that's going to be, and tell me if you agree or not, the difference with this group. I think with who they were able to add, bringing back Josh Bell, getting Nathaniel Lowe, a full year James Wood, who looks godly like in spring training. I think they're going to score.
By the way, mm-hmm. James Wood, everything that I heard when I was down in spring training from anyone, players, PR staff, manager, they think this guy's going to be a legit superstar. Everything that you've heard talked about this guy, it's not hyperbole. This guy could be one of the best players in the game.
When you can crush the ball the way he can, and then I think what caught me off guard with him, and I think I said this to you before, he doesn't look like a guy that could go out and steal 25, 30 bags, but he can. Like, he moves, man. And I think that, to me, is the part of his game where I kind of slept on a little bit. But
he's an athlete. The Nationals put out a video a couple of weeks ago of him playing at St. John's College High School for mm-hmm. Coach Behan. shout out Coach Behan. And, I mean, that dude is just a freak athlete, and it just so happens he plays baseball.
Right.
And so there was a home run he hit in spring training that reminds me a little bit of the craziest home run I've ever seen, not in person, but just on TV, was Giancarlo Stanton hit one when he was still with the Marlins that looked like it was just a line drive to the second baseman that never came out of the air and went over the right field wall. And James Wood, being a lefty, hit it to left. And they said down there that the only reason the guys in the dugout knew that it was going to be a home run is the people in the bullpen started scrambling. Otherwise, they're like, that's a routine liner to left. Yeah. Just crazy.
So it's the type of power, man, that these dudes have. What do you think about the acquisition this offseason of Michael Soroka? Like, how big of an impact do you think he's able to play this year? And do you think he's going to be able to bounce back? Because he's been pretty bad over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason he's here is last year he was a starter that didn't work with the worst team in baseball, the White Sox, mm-hmm. and then he ended up in the bullpen. Reason he's here, a large part, is because the Nationals were willing to give him a shot in the rotation. Yeah. And so I don't know what to expect. I think, you know, this is a type of move. The last couple of years they've made moves with guys for a one-year deal where it was like, oh, he's getting traded at the deadline. This doesn't strike me as that. I think they want this guy to be a long-term part, or at least for this year, they want him to be a part of the rotation all year. I don't know. I really don't know. I think he's got the talent. He was someone that I thought they were going to have to deal with for the Braves for a long time. But we'll see. I think first part of spring training looked awesome. Second part of spring training, not so much. I think you're going to get a mixed bag at times with Mike Soroka.
It's going to be interesting. So, you know, I'm excited to see this year, man, and hopefully he's able to stay healthy all year. Trevor Williams was pretty damn good last year for this group, man.
So the one concern that I have about this group going into opening day tomorrow mm-hmm. with the pitching staff is people love to hate on Patrick Corbin, and understandably so. He was horrible the last couple of years. But he threw 180 innings last year.
Yeah.
And that's a dude that went out there, and even if he was giving up 5-6 runs, he would still go out there and pitch 6-7 innings.
Yeah.
And Trevor Williams, I think, could be good, but he's kind of a five-and-dive guy. Mackenzie Gore hasn't proved that he can go deep into games. Jake Irvin. So the bullpen, they could end up really, really taxed early on this season. So one of these guys or a couple of these guys really need to step up, go deep into ball games.
I know DJ Hurz is your guy. Concerned with him being put on a short-term IL with the sprained elbow?
So he got moved to 60-day today.
Oh, it's 60-day.
So it was 15, but they moved him to 60 to make room for Brad Lord today.
Okay.
I think ultimately, anytime you hear UCL injury, sprain, that generally leads to Tommy John. I think this is I don't know that he pitches this year. It's disappointing.
Yeah, it is. He was, you know, one of the bright spots for a point in time last year. Him, Mitchell Parker, gave you some good stuff in a surprising fashion. Excited to see what they're able to do this weekend. What is it? Is it a four-game series with Philadelphia? Is it Thursday, Friday,
three-game series, because they always do this bit with opening day because they don't want to screw you right out of the gate. So yeah. Thursday, you got opening day, and then Friday, you got the day off.
Oh, so I have a day off Friday.
I can't stand that, but they do it because early.
Yeah. So what time is first pitch Saturday? One thing I love about this area in Navy Yard during that season, people go out to these games, man.
Oh, yeah.
Even when they're bad, people go out to these games. So I'm excited to see the uptick in traffic. But maybe I can try to
4:05 first pitch. I believe uh-huh. it's definitely 4:05 tomorrow. I believe Saturday's 4:05, and then a 1:35 start on Sunday. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be a good series. People will be booing Bryce Harper, so that'll be fun.
And you're going to find out a lot about who you are. We mentioned at the top of the show, man, there is internally a lot of confidence with this group that, you know, the rebuild, I don't want to say it's over, but they're ready to go out and try and win some baseball games this year. Toby, you said earlier you think you see them as like a 75-win team here potentially. Obviously not going to be good enough to compete for the wild card in the NL, but we'll see, man. I think it's possible, obviously. I know you feel the same way. It's just a lot will have to go right.
Yeah, so the part that's fun about this team mm-hmm. is they'll go as far as their young guys go. The guys that you care about, James Wood, yep. Dylan Cruz, CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, you name it, Jake Irvin, whoever you want to say is your favorite couple players on the Nationals, the young guys, it rides on them.
Yeah.
If they play awesome, they could win 80-plus games. If they don't play as well, or they kind of play kind of what we're expecting, maybe somewhere in the middle of the road, they win 75 games. So it kind of all rides on them.
Last thing here on the Nats before we get to Kevin Sheehan. What do you make of the decision? And I know he was kind of the social media darling because he came into spring training looking all swole, What do you make of the decision for them to, and is this a direct decision, going J.Y. over Robert Hassel?
Well, I think they were always going to go with J.Y., but I would not be surprised if Bobby Barrels keeps it rolling in AAA and J.Y. struggles a little bit. There's a little pressure there because Dylan Cruz has shown that he can play a Gold Glove caliber outfield, whether it's in right field or potentially down the line in center field. So even if you were to bring him up, you would lose a little bit because J.Y., in my opinion, is the best at getting to balls in center field in the entire major leagues. He's just any ball that hangs up, he gets to. It's incredible.
Freak athlete.
But there's some pressure. He's going to have to hit. And a lot of people look at OPS and batting. I don't even care about any of those sorts of things. On-base percentage, for me, is the number to watch for J.Y. because he can run. So, D. Gordon, back in the day, had about a 330 when he was going well for the Marlins. I think 330 is a benchmark. Last year, he was around 316. I need him up over 330 at a minimum. You'd like to see him closer to 350. But 330 at a minimum, I'm fine with. But if he's not there and Hassel keeps it rolling, he's a good defender, too, and he's a better bat.
That's what I was going to say. They're kind of choosing, you know, defense over offense with the decision. And you were the one that reminded me of this. Like, think about when the Soto deal happens. Like, Hassel's supposed to be the one.
Yeah, he was supposed to be the guy that, for sure, like, you didn't know what CJ could be, you hoped. You didn't know what Gore could be, you hoped. James Wood, you didn't know, but you hoped. Susana, same thing. But you knew for a fact that Hassel was going to be a solid prospect. That hasn't been the case so far, but who knows? Maybe he's found it again.
We'll see. Final hour of power coming up here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. Kevin Sheehan joins the program next to give us all things Maryland Terrapins basketball, including whether or not Coach Willard will be around for next season. That's next on The Fan.